Looking for some new art inspired by the national parks? Then be sure to check out our online store, The Gaze Shop.
This season, as we explore the landscapes of Olympic National Park, Mount Rainier National Park, Carlsbad Cavern National Park, and Guadalupe Mountains National Park, we've got some new items and designs coming your way.
Introducing our Olympic National Park and Mount Rainier National Park posters. These 12 by 18 posters make a great addition to any home or office, or a great gift for any lover of the national parks, even if that national parks lover is you.
Whether it's art for your wall or a sticker for your water bottle, you're sure to find something that sparks your love of the outdoors. Visit shop.gazeatthenationalparks.com to bring some of the national parks home with you.
My name's Beau. This year, I feel like there's a lot of hatred going around. This year, I want to be strong enough to live through it and be able to tell people how to be better than people were this year. Because there's a lot of bigotry, a lot of hatred going around this year because of like the election, the indoctrination following the election. And I really want people to like keep staying loving even though there's so much hatred going around. It's always meant to me, pride has always meant love, not only in a romantic, but also in a platonic sense, familial sense. Like, pride is love, love is love, and I want that to stay the way it is. Because we're going to get back to where we were, like, let's say, before 2016, before 2024, where we were all loving, we weren't having to deal with so many bigots and so many, like, we're going to be able to do this. Pride means persistence and pride means love, and love is persistence.
Hello and welcome to Pride Mix here at Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. June is LGBTQIA plus Pride Month, and during the month of June, our Trail Mix episodes are called Pride Mixes.
Pride Mix is a chance for us to dive deep into queer history and, in some cases, how queer history intersects with the national parks and the National Park Service's role as America's storyteller.
Pride is sometimes undefinable, and at the same time, pride has a multitude of definitions depending on the person and the season of life they are in, because pride is also ever evolving.
The last several years of history have come to show this evolution, as progress that the queer community has made has been stopgapped, set back, and legislated against at a dizzying pace.
But that does not make pride any less important. In fact, it underscores its importance not just for those who are out and proud, but for those who may not have yet had the opportunity to be.
Each year, we have used our Pride Mix episodes as a way to explore how pride and the National Park Service intersect. And this year, Pride Mix is a two-part series.
Last year, we had the opportunity to interview queer individuals within the community and organizations whose work is having a direct impact on outdoor spaces, the national parks, and the LGBTQIA plus community.
One of those interviews last year was with Diana Rodriguez, one of the two founders and CEO of Pride Live.
This year, we were able to sit down and chat with both co-founders of Pride Live, Diana Rodriguez and Anne-Marie Gothard, the organization and the two individuals responsible for the creation of the Stonewall National Monument Visitor Center in New York City. And while being partners in business and nonprofit mission, they are also partners in life.
Since the opening of the Visitor Center during Pride 2024, a lot has shifted in the cultural landscape related to queer rights, but in regards to Pride, nothing has been stamped out. It has only continued to evolve.
A year after its opening, we were invited to join the team of the Stonewall National Monument Visitor Center in their tent at World Pride in Washington, D.C., to discuss how the work of the Visitor Center continues and why Pride is in some ways more important than ever.
This episode features our conversation with Diana Rodriguez, CEO of Pride Live and co-founder of the Stonewall National Monument Visitor Center. Hi, Diana. It is so good to be here with you today on the Saturday celebration of World Pride here in D.C.
It's wonderful to have you both here with us in real life, and to be here in D.C. is really amazing.
Yeah, the energy is wild. We're literally sitting here at your tent at World Pride at the, like, Capitol Street Fair. We are sitting here, like, the all of the banners are up. The activation is up. We're here to celebrate and continue the work of the Stonewall Visitor Center in satellite, perhaps, here at World Pride. Let's just start with, what is exciting you about today? We're here, we're sitting here. What are you feeling from the energy here?
Well, I mean, there's a lot to process. We are just 3 weeks away from the one-year anniversary of the opening of the Stonewall National Monument Visitor Center. So that's a big emotion for us. I think to be a part of World Pride is always something very special. To be a part of World Pride in DC for a number of reasons. It's where Anne-Marie and I first met 40 years ago at Georgetown. So DC holds a very special place in our heart. But I think with everything that's going on, to celebrate ourselves, to collect together in a space like this, you already spoke about the energy in DC when DC is not, I think, the way we always grew up knowing DC, is really important. To be here, to celebrate ourselves, to know that no matter what someone says, we can always celebrate our community and be proud of who we are.
Bringing the visitor center as that satellite here has, I think, a really powerful statement, especially right now where we're at. What have you seen for yourself in the last year in the evolution of that visitor center being open? And maybe how is that just from being involved with Pride Live for so long and having that be quite a mission for Pride Live? How has that evolved now and kind of moving forward? What do you kind of see happening?
So two things. As you guys know, the Stonewall National Monument Visitor Center is independently owned and operated, which means Anne-Marie and I own and operate the Visitor Center. That's quite daunting every single day, but knowing with everything that's going on that no one can change the content that we have in our space. No one can come in and update our website. So the stories of Stonewall and our community that we tell within the Visitor Center are always going to be there. I think secondly, we are humbly surprised by the number of people who have already come through our doors. The first couple of months, a lot of folks were like, oh, we didn't know you were here. But that's definitely changed the last couple of months. We're about to hit 60,000 visitors over the course of 11 and a half months. And it's a very, you guys know, it's a very personal space. It's 2,100 square feet in the West Village, but it's a very personal space for everyone that walks through those doors. So that's really humbling for us. I think we thought if we could muster 1,000 people a month, we would be really happy. So to be at 60,000 and to have impacted 60,000 lives at this time is really significant for us.
Do you think the energy has shifted since last November? Do you think that has been a part of the surge of visitorship? Or do you think a combination of things, just also word of mouth and understanding that the center is open? How do you feel things have kind of moved when it comes to those numbers that you're seeing now?
I'm going to say I don't do interviews often, but I always love talking to the both of you because I think your insight is always spot on. So how I'll answer that one is we always thought the visitor center would be important. And we always said we're the first LGBTQ visitor center within the National Park Service. So that was our banner for a really long time. And then you mentioned November. And then we realized how important we were, that we existed, that people could come visit us, that people would seek us out even more than before the election. And I think that's happened. I think that's why we have almost 60,000 visitors. If people are online saying, where can I find out about my community? Where can I find out about the history of the LGBTQ community? And we pop up and they come to visit us. So I always thought we would be important and have impact. I think what happened in November has just accelerated that in a way we didn't anticipate, but it's in a really good way.
Being 1 year in with almost 60,000 visitors, I want to share how I found myself engaging with the Visitor Center and what role it's starting to play in my own life. And the way I share it is anytime I have, because I'm not originally from the area, I live in New Jersey, but anytime I have people visit me, I'm like, we have to go here. You have to go here. This is, it's like we were talking to Annie, who works with all of you, and she was saying that it's like a secular pilgrimage. Somebody called it a secular pilgrimage. And I really feel like that because our community's history is so often oral history. And like we have to tell the stories. And so often we were telling the story of Stonewall, which is like its own honor by itself. And now it's like to have the space literally in Stonewall, like a part of Stonewall, that part of it is a learning center, a visitor center, a place to go to where you can bring other people. It has the story built physically into the space. It's such a special place, and it makes me think about, we talk about this home parks a lot, and like I do feel like it's kind of become like a home park space for at least me when I, you know, bring people in to see it. I'm just curious, like when you're there, how do you see people starting to engage with the visitor center and the bar simultaneously?
We always thought we'd be the perfect sister for the bar. We're open when they're not. And especially for families who might want to visit both, they can come visit us first. I did want to touch on when you talked about the actual physical space. So creating the first LGBTQ visitor center within the National Park Service was very important, but creating it in the other half of the bar literally 50% of the original bar. A lot of people don't know that. So when we tell them that and they are on site, you can see them transform. Like reading about Stonewall or reading about our community or listening to a podcast, but then being able to actually walk in a space where history happened, I do feel it transforms people. Like they will always remember the visit for that. And then we tell them, this is where the actual bar used to be here. This is where the dance floor was. This is a replica of the actual jukebox. So I think that adds to it and it allows them to hold on to the history even more because they're in the space, but then we kind of have these remnants of what was there then. You literally can see people be affected by it. So to the way you talked about your visit there, we can see that. We don't have to interact with the visitors. We can just see kind of their body language change when they realize where they are. So that's really important for us. It's very emotional. I'll just say this. It's emotional to be here. It was a really difficult journey to bring it to life, but everything happens for a reason. And something tells me we created it. Maybe this was going to happen. What happened in November was going to happen. And now everyone has this space that they can go to. So we couldn't be happier. The humidity today is kind of awful, but we couldn't be happier.
Yes.
It's kind of awful in DC, yeah.
I want to touch on just the idea of having that space be transformative for people, going in and feeling that history, because so much of history is ephemeral. You know, we're able to like have it for a moment in time, and then we have these spaces that you're able to come back to and visit and have this touchstone experience with that space. But I think one thing that I love that you're also doing here today is this engagement with community, because it's so important to continue that story. So you have the Parsons Project that's happening now, that's been a part of the visitor center since it opened. You also have this banner wall behind us, that what brought you here today. Why is that continued tradition of storytelling and history for anyone that visits this space important for you?
So that's a really good question. I think inconsistent with what we're talking about, people really needing to seek out our history, their own history, is probably going to be more difficult over the next couple of years than ever before. From the very beginning, as you guys know, we've documented everything that we've done at the Visitor Center for the community's sake down the line. We actually had several cameras running by an amazing producer called Adrienne Lim, and she had 3 or 4 cameras running during the 2 years of the build out. So we have this amazing time-lapse video. You spoke about the Parsons journals. Out of all the activations, they're probably the most compelling and touching, where, you know, there are prompts on the books and people can respond to any of the 12 prompts. We are now on the 3rd iteration of those journals.
That's amazing.
And every time we pick one up and you flip through the pages, there's different handwriting and different in color. And that means someone new has written something else. So we are also started archiving those. We feel somewhere down the line, those journals are going to be a telling of this time. And the part about writing behind you, you know, what brought you here today, that's all in tribute to Mark Siegel, who, as you know, famously wrote On the Streets of Stonewall Tomorrow Night. So we always feel it's important for people to literally write down why they're here, not just for us, but also for themselves, like to literally put it down and say, this is why I'm here. But we were just with some folks from the National Park Foundation yesterday, and they literally said, make sure you archive every single thing you all do at the Visitor Center. So we're taking that really seriously because, as I said, I think seeking out our history is going to be tougher over the next couple of years. Everyone's not going to be able to come to a World Pride. Everyone's not going to be able to visit us in DC. So the more that we can archive these items and make them available, it's just one of our top goals moving forward.
I think for any written experience in a space like that or at an event like this, it becomes a cathartic moment for a lot of people. It's an opportunity for people to speak their truth in a space that they may not otherwise have. So it gives the voice that people may not just have all the time, and it allows you to do it in a safe sort of way.
You mentioned the cathartic experience. We actually sometimes see people exhale when they come into the space, and sometimes I might get emotional because it's painful. You can tell people who are not out, and when they're ready to go back out, they physically kind of change their walk. And so it's the most amazing thing in the world to work there, to experience the people who come visit us. And we have moments like that where we know we're like, and that person is not out at work, or they're not out to their family. So I think opportunities like World Pride, with all this vibrancy and colors and diversity walking by us for this weekend, it gives everyone the opportunity to be their absolute most self. And that's just beautiful.
Hey, y'all. It's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
I'm Adonis. Maybe pride to me means a little bit less than to other people. Some people, you know, grew up before there was a lot more acceptance. I kind of grew up right on the edge of when things started being more accepted. Pride to me is something that's just kind of natural, something that doesn't take a lot for me to be comfortable with. It's something that, you know, is there in my life, but it's not something that is prominent, that skews my views or directs me in a certain way. I just live my life and it's easy to be myself. This year, I feel like pride for sure is, I feel like it's in a good direction. It's about discovering myself. I'll be traveling, moving to a new country. It's going to be a much larger LGBT area. So I think pride to me is going to be allowing myself to discover new things and to be myself in an area where I don't have to try so hard to be who I am. It's more like there's so many people being themselves that it's not anything different.
The other thing that I really love about the design of the visitor center, all of us sitting here right now are all museum nerds. We love museums. We go to museums all the time. And so like the curation of physical space in a museum so that one might engage with information, so vital the way it's designed. And what I love about the visitor center, one, is that all of the information is sort of laid out in a very clear way across one wall. There's a simplicity to that that is so effective. And so just like this happened, then this, then we're here, and now we're here. And we've been here the whole time, and this is only the beginning. There's so much open space, and because there's open space, like I know that it's so great to just be able to like float around and like I find myself talking to other people, but also being able to take quiet moments. It's a warm, welcoming space while also being a reverent space. And I think that's like a really hard thing to achieve. And I think a lot of museum spaces would love to achieve that. I know it was such like a lift to like get to the place where the doors were open. Then there's a whole year of all of the wonderful and also maybe not so wonderful surprises that come with having a visitor center open for a whole year. And I'm wondering, like, what were some of those surprises that showed up that were unexpected?
So I'm glad you mentioned that everyone at the table happens to be museum nerds. Anne and I are massive museum nerds. Wherever we go, we spend hours in museums and people are always yelling at us to leave. And you asked about some of the surprises or challenges. So I think like most places, but especially in New York, when you're looking at a space, you're like, it's perfect. And then you sign the lease and you're like, it's half the size that I thought it was. When you were talking about content, because of the space, it's only 2,100 square feet. We felt we had to be very intentional with the content. Also take into our process that people are overwhelmed with information these days. So when you talk about the stories of Stonewall and those panels, that was probably where we spent the most time because we wanted it to be takeaway information where each panel you could read it and you would be able to take something away that you would remember. We didn't want it to be overwhelming and we didn't want it to be where they said, oh, I really don't understand it. That was probably where we spent months curating that content with Mark Siegel and the wonderful team at Local Projects. Doing something for the first time is always the toughest because there's no roadmap. there was no roadmap how to, for Anne-Marie and I to create a visitor center to do the first one with the National Park Service. So that's the first partnership that they had. We really built it. I mean, you've talked about the design. Everything behind that is as strong and foundational as what people see when they come in. We literally took the place to beyond the studs, because the only thing I said is, I'm going to do this for the first 10 years, but I want it to be there for forever. So we built it that way, from the plumbing to all the fun stuff lesbians want to talk about, from the plumbing to the electrical. I hated every minute of it. I'm not joking. That was the toughest part, you guys. You're dealing with contractors. We had a really tight timeline. I was ready to do prison time. Like, it was that bad, but nothing worth doing and the impact we've had is easy. So there was not one day where there was not a surprise. It's also part of a historical landmark, so there was that added layer. But I'm very fortunate. We had the most amazing founding partners. We're here today because of JP Morgan Chase, who's one of our founding partners. We had the most amazing project manager. But I remember when we first started, no one said we would finish in 2 years, and no one said we would finish on budget, on which we did both. So every day was a challenge. I'm not going to lie. It was a different challenge. But most of it was just the construction, because it is an older building. But we wanted it to be representative of what happened there. And that meant making everything way beyond code, making everything fresh and new, but while still keeping the integrity of the legacy. In a way, I'm ready for the challenges to end. We still have them, clearly, but we're very proud of the space, and it means a lot to us when we get feedback about the space. So I want to thank you for the feedback that you've both given us over the last couple of months, because that matters to us. So thank you both. Yeah.
Of course, of course.
So I think one thing, you know, being a group of museum nerds, that I find is that museums can feel very static, in that history has already happened. These things are no longer, not that they're no longer ongoing, but they're not being as documented as rapidly and appearing in that space as rapidly. So that is something I feel is not the case for this visitor center. What's your hope to see for the future, as you want to do this for 10 years, the first 10 years, and have it be ongoing? Or what do you want to see happen as the space progresses and grows, you know, beyond a year into that 5-10 year mark? And what are your hopes for it?
So I think that's a really good point, especially when we've all gone, all of us, to museums in Europe where the history is so much older. And to your point, the museum is what it is. It's kind of static. You're going to read about it. One of the things that we really took into account when designing the space was we wanted it to be representative and organic of the community, so we could constantly change content. The only thing that does not change is when you walk in is that bump out wall, which is why we created this space, which has my Uncle Tony's flag, as you guys know. The opening, the archway that shows the brick wall that before it was bricked up used to connect 51 and 53. And then the stories of Stonewall Wall. So those three things stay the same for forever. Everything else we update every year, from the Parsons exhibit to the content in the theater to the music in the jukebox to the paintings we have on the wall. We really want to be receptive and kind of a insight into what's going on in the community. So, you know, I know that you've mentioned the Parsons journals. I want to talk about that for a second, because it's interesting. When we first reached out to them, because of the demographic, I thought they were going to give me something digital. And I was mad at myself for thinking about that. And when they came up with the journals, I'm like, oh my God, they want us to write in pen, and I got it. And I was like, these young kids are like taking us back. And no, take a minute. Don't send a text. Don't send an email. Literally write down what you are feeling at this moment at the visitor center. So we want to leave the whole rest of the space is going to be open to that, to updating the exhibit, updating the activations, but it is so we can be reflective of the community and what's happening. And I think being a museum nerd, you go to the museum and you're like, this is what I like and this is what I don't like. One of the things we did want to create at the visitor center was, we definitely have our historical wall that won't change, but then everything else can be updated and organic and what's happening in our community. So that's kind of exciting. We won't walk in. You guys will have a very different experience this time next year than you have when you come this June. And that, it'll keep people coming back. That's kind of the cool part, and to hopefully keep us creative.
And I think for our final question, I know for myself, pride in general, a word that's part of the title of your nonprofit. It is a word that is the center of this entire event we're at today. It is a word that is also present in the visitor center in many ways. And I'm curious, what evolution of pride have you seen in your own life? Where do you kind of see it going?
So that's a really good question. And I will get personal, if I could, for a second. So Anne-Marie and I are celebrating our 40th anniversary in August. And I've been very honest about this. Anne-Marie has always been the breadwinner in our family. I've always worked in not-for-profit. She was not out at work until her last job, for fear that she would lose her job. And basically, we wouldn't be able to survive. To be in a partnership for 40 years, to know there were times when we couldn't hold hands for fear of something happening, to be at a point where we're in our late 50s and being very open about who we are. So I think personally that's important for us. I think as far as the community goes, I have to tell you, today's generation is bold and brave. I wish I had an ounce of their bravery, the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they are just themselves. I see that as the evolution of the community and the movement. We were somewhere yesterday, and literally, there was just an army of young kids just out and loud and proud, and I don't know if they've ever felt I can't be myself for one moment of their lives. And that's something to celebrate. While there's a whole group that cannot experience that and that suffer an immense amount because they cannot be themselves at home or at school, to be here and see so many younger people just out and brave, you guys. Again, I tell myself, if I had an ounce of their bravery, I don't know what else I could do. So I see that as one of the evolutions of the community. I do think going forward, there kind of has to be a regathering of everybody. And we really kind of have to get together about the actions we're going to start taking together and collectively. And sometimes that's not easy. If I may, Mark Siegel talks a great deal about the community after Stonewall and a community seeking identity and a community not agreeing with each other and fighting. We might have to do a little bit of that to get it moving again, but I think the way people can communicate today, which is very different from back then, the way today's demographic feels they can be represented and be themselves is really important. And thirdly, we're sitting here in D.C. in someone's backyard. If there was ever an opportunity for the community to do it now, this would be that time.
My name is Carly. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. Pride means a lot to me. I am a proud bisexual woman. I am married to a man, and sometimes that can feel a bit invisible. And I just make sure I'm loud about who I am, and that just because I'm married to a man doesn't make me any less queer and any less a part of this community. And just getting to be around all these people always means a lot to me. I try to always go to Pride in Columbus, and it's just really exciting to be around this many people and just the state of the world. It's really important to be loud and proud. This year, 50th anniversary, correct, of World Pride? I believe so. So, it's a big milestone. And then in addition to that, it's just the world is crazy. I think more than ever, it's just really, really important to be ourselves and not let anybody tell us who we should be.
And for more information about and to donate to the Stonewall National Monument Visitor Center, go to stonewallvisitorcenter.org. Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Dallard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.